Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking with Prasad. Prasad runs Bixby Product, Partnerships, and Developer Relations at Samsung, and is a colleague I have the pleasure of working with. Prasad has a deep background with voice and conversational AI, having worked with Alexa early and then joining Viv Labs, the creator of Samsung Bixby. Prasad, welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thanks, Roger. I've been in the AI, machine learning, voice space for a couple of decades now. I started in the voice industry probably purely by accident. As a grad student, I fell in love with voice over IP because that was one of the really cool ways in which you could actually connect back with your family. My family was in India. It was a really cool way of you being able to communicate with them easily, because in those days, if you have to make a phone call internationally, the carriers used to charge an arm and a leg. And here was this new technology that actually you could just talk, connect over like probably either for free or just pennies on like pennies per minute. So just a thing that I thought that, wow, the technology can do something, you know, so disruptive and cool. So I started interning at a startup in Boulder, Colorado, where I was doing my grad school. And they happened to actually do speech. And so they were actually into building middleware and enterprise speech and IVR stuff. So it just happened. I just accidentally entered the voice industry. And then since then, I've worked on Microsoft Cortana, Amazon, worked on Alexa, and now Samsung Bixby. So I've had the opportunity to work with both enterprise and, you know, consumer products. I've led enterprise businesses, product portfolio, 100 million plus revenue. Same on the consumer side, I've been able to lead products with hundreds of millions of users globally. So it's been really like a fun, you know, experience to see how AI and voice has evolved over time. And even cloud, I've had the opportunity to work on services and cloud before the cloud term existed. And this was my time, as I was explaining during my time at Tell Me, where a lot of the things like per usage pricing and a lot of those actually predates even what is called cloud. So we were actually doing some of the stuff. So it's been a fascinating journey and a learning.
Got it. Well, that's a rich background. You've worked with Cortana early and then Alexa, and then you moved over to Viv. Was that just before the Samsung acquisition, or had Samsung already acquired them?
It was right after the acquisition. It was an interesting, so I was with Amazon Alexa at that time and just got pinged by like one of the Viv folks. And I'd heard about Viv and I knew that it was the next gig from the Siri co-founders, but I didn't know too much into exactly like what they were doing. But once I, you know, started talking to them, basically I was really attracted by the vision, the people, and the opportunity. And that's how I joined Viv. It was after the Samsung acquisition, but before we had actually launched any of the devices.
Great. Yeah, it sounds like you and I have a similar story with Viv, because I was introduced with a hackathon, and then that's when I met Adam Chire and some of the team. And I was like, wow, I really love the vision and I love the thinking of these people. And Adam is such an inspirational leader. It was pretty quickly afterwards, I was like, what's going on there? I'm looking. And he's like, well, send my resume. And one thing led to another. So I always like to ask my guests, what was your very first experience with a voice assistant?
Yeah. So my first experience with voice assistants was actually when I was working at Tell Me. This was, again, before any of today's voice assistants like Siri, Alexa, or Google Assistant actually even existed. And the first experience was 1-800-555-TELL. So this was essentially Tell Me's original vision was say what you want. And they had this vision called Dial Tone 2.0, where you just pick up, you know, your phone and it's ready for you. You can, again, say what you want and you'll get the answer. And so it was very simple. And the first way of exposing this to users was this 800 number. It was very popular at that time, 800-555-TELL, where you could just make a call and, you know, ask for anything that, you know, that a modern assistant does today, like get your weather information, like news, stock codes, sports scores, lottery info, like travel info, even driving directions. And it was essentially a free service. And this was before iPhone. So where actually phone calls were a big part of like how you would use your phone. And so this was a very natural way for people to access information. So it was fairly sophisticated technology background in the back end. On the front end, it was essentially like phone calls. So that was the kind of experience where it actually predates any of the voice assistant experience today.
That's a good reminder. Aside from IVRs, which have been around for a long time and are really simplistic, really, the next generation of voice assistants was things like Tell Me. I know Google was doing some things there. And then the one that I always remember is Movie Phone, right? Because he called up. I can still hear that guy's voice and got the movie schedules. And that was all via voice. And that was, I think we sometimes forget about that, right? We talk about, people talk about, oh, my first experience was when Alexa came out. It's like, no, you probably used the phone. And that was a voice assistant way back when. So that's very cool. So you were working for Tell Me. And then was Tell Me acquired by Microsoft then?
Yeah, it was very similar to Viv. So I joined Tell Me like around right after the acquisition. And again, a lot of, there's some similarity in terms of how I joined Tell Me was how I joined Viv. It was still an independent subsidiary. And so it was basically like a startup, but, you know, essentially with all the benefits of being, you know, able to very scale quickly into all the Microsoft products. So at that time, I think it was right after the acquisition and Microsoft was basically, you know, wanting that technology, because I think for a long time, Bill Gates had this vision of really, he was a strong believer and proponent of speech and voice. And somehow Microsoft was not like the leader in that space. And I think, so this was one of the bigger acquisitions that they made to actually drive towards that vision. Two things, I think one was, and Tell Me had a couple of areas. One was on the consumer side, which was some of these services around 1-800-555-TEL. They also had a deep integration with all the carriers. So in the older time, you would press 411 and get a lot of information that you want from the carriers. Again, that was all, a lot of that was powered by the platform. And then the third part was, as you said, the IVR, customer care kind of experience where you called like your bank, you're trying to order a pizza or you're trying to book a flight thing. And a lot of those, pretty much 80% of the Fortune 100 companies were essentially using the Tell Me platform. So it was a first major version of that speech platform, and which was both at scale used the consumer side. Also, there was an enterprise business and making money as well. So that's what attracted me because of that opportunity to be able to do both, right? Both the consumer side and the enterprise side.
Interesting. As you talk about that and you talk about those companies are trying to cut costs with automated CSR, that's such a hot field right now today, right? In 2022, yeah. It was hot back then. Everybody realizes that the cost of a human actually answering a call is super high, right?
Yeah,
anything you can do to AI to fix that is a big win.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. There are a lot of instances where, you know, the products and technologies where I've worked on, the timing, I think, is very important for some of these things. And a couple of examples that I can talk about, I think the whole notion of the enterprise and speech. I was working in speech before the time when speech wasn't sexy. So it wasn't, this was the pre-deep learning era, all the elastic, compute. And at that time, speech was still, there was a lot of good work done, but because of the technical limitations, the customer experience was not at the level where it just became mainstream, but still you had a lot of important and problems to be solved. I think that was one good case. Now, I think enterprise and speech and conversational AI is like super hot at this point, but it in an interesting way. So I was working on that. And then at one point, I actually moved away from speech into machine learning and video and streaming and other things. And then I actually came back into speech. And that's when I joined Amazon Alexa. And because that's when the whole, like with the launch of Echo devices, and it became like more of a consumer play, and with all the advancements in deep learning, the speech technology became like good enough that it actually started becoming more of a mainstream. And then this has essentially been the second wave, if you will, on that. And now now you see that again, it's from the consumer, it's actually moved back to like enterprise. It was started off in the enterprise and the IVR side. It came all the way into like search, and some of the early work at Tell Me was around essentially basically using that to kind of power some of the key experiences for Microsoft, which was at that time was heavy focus on Bing and voice search. For example, all the experiences on Windows, which was kind of similar to what Apple was doing with iPhone, and then Xbox So that was all the entertainment and services. So it was all these were essentially the consumer experiences that we were trying to do with the same platform. So yeah, so enterprise, consumer, now it's enterprise picking up again.
It's interesting. I would say the pendulum swings back and forth, B2C to B2B. And you're absolutely right. For the past several years, it's been really focused on B2C and in invoice. Thanks to Alexa and then Google and Samsung and other people came up with all these really powerful. But you're right, over the past year-ish or so, I find a lot of really interesting B2B voice use cases. The pendulum has swung back and forth. And it'll swing back to B2C too, but it's a natural kind of pendulum swinging back and forth with technology. So tell me more about, well, you said you got inspired and joined Viv Labs. Tell me a little bit more about who maybe you inspired you or who recruited you over. And then tell me a little bit more about your history, what you got hired for and what you do now.
Yeah, absolutely. I was at Amazon and working in the Alexa product group at that time. As I said, I'd heard about Viv Labs, but didn't know too much, on the details. And then I just got a ping on LinkedIn saying, "Hey, here's this really innovative startup. Viv Labs is the same co-founder as Siri. Just want to chat." So it was like a coffee chat, and I was like, "Okay, it's always interesting to in this space that when you chat, it's like you learn something new and exciting." And so I just had the chance to talk to the team, and there are three things that really excited me. The first was people. I think the opportunity to work closely with the original founders of Siri, and the fact that this was actually their next venture, which means they're basically applied all their learnings from essentially creating Siri, which is essentially was the pioneering effort, which is the first commercial voice assistant as you, see, and launching that on Apple's devices. So I think applying all that learning and doing something, essentially, this was their better version of Siri, if you will. And second was the vision. So from having worked at both Microsoft Cortana and then Amazon Alexa and being in the industry for a while, I think Viv's vision was the most ambitious and forward looking. And also I got a chance to review the underlying technology and all the developer tools. And they were very, very advanced compared to what other companies or platforms were there. So I could clearly see the opportunity for one example is normally even today's assistants, you would focus on simple weather queries, you're setting up a timer, an alarm. I mean, those are still the highest used and most popular experiences. But one of the early things that Viv was looking at was essentially voice commerce, right? How do you actually get transactions completed? So and in a way, they wanted to essentially make sure that the platform was ready for these kinds of advanced use cases, complex tasks. And then obviously you can do the simple things and do the simple things well, but being able to do that complex task where in a simple way was essentially the eventual goal and the vision, and being very neutral and being able to most focused on the developers part was also very attractive to me. And then the third was role, the opportunity to essentially build and scale out a next generation AI assistant experience and a corresponding developer ecosystem across Samsung's massive device portfolio and with hundreds of millions of users globally. It was something very, very exciting. And finally, you don't get too many chances in your life where you're actually taking on Apple, Google, and Amazon at the same time. And with a very, very small team we've had. So it was just kind of too exciting to pass once I talked to the team and looked at the opportunity. So
yeah, it's such a great example of voice commerce, which has obviously had its challenges, but I'm still bullish on it. But I think something that some people are often blown away by when they look at the Bixby platform is the full support for transactions. And I could be wrong here, but I think it's the only platform that has that rich support for voice-based transactions. So it really was, as you said, built the founders of Siri, built Siri, learned a ton. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, okay, next gen, with all these lessons learned, we're going to build a next generation voice platform. And I think when people look at the tooling and look at the capabilities, it becomes pretty obvious where there's some kind of next gen thinking going on there. In some cases, the things that we haven't fully taken advantage of, in my opinion, yet, are sitting there in the platform. So speaking of Bixby, you've seen it evolve. And since you joined Viv and Samsung, tell me more about where Bixby is today.
Yeah, I think since I've joined Viv, we've been able to leverage the, there have been a lot of, I would say Bixby has evolved significantly like over the last few years. And I think the first thing we were able to do was we were able to leverage the power of the and the Viv platform. I think one of the first things we've done is, you know, launch the and really next-gen assistant experience on hundreds of millions of devices and take coming going from mobile devices to wearables to TVs and home appliances. So pretty much the entire, you know, ecosystem. And it's really powerful to have one platform and that experience that actually scales across from a device which is as small as a watch to something as big as a TV and to other devices where there's no screen at all. So to be able to power that kind of an experience and also providing that capability to developers where they can actually just go and build a capsule and being able to get that capsule working across a variety of these devices and being able to publish it and for any user to, you know, use it. I think those are significant things we've done. And also some of the core advancements in the underlying technology as well, kind of moving to state-of-art deep learning systems on our speech and natural language understanding components. I think those have been really big advancements we've done. And some of them obviously reflect both for end users in terms of the experience and also for developers. For example, we are very early on, we figured out that we wanted to make it super easy for, you know, users to be able to access any capsule that's, you know, built for Bixby. And so things like natural language categories and like Bixby views that actually makes it super easy for a user to just say what they want. And then essentially the capsule, and again, a lot of things around friction-free capsule enablement where you can just use voice and the capsule is enabled and executed. And you don't have to do anything like go browse somewhere, enable it, and then use a specific way of invocation. So that just tells you the power of some of the things that are possible. And also we've been constantly evolving the platform. I think some of the things on bringing more of Bixby smarts like on device is again, something that we are really focused on. And again, it just opens up a lot of possibilities to create more delightful user experiences. And again, this is one of the trends I think will actually continue where you actually bring the model closer to where the data is, as opposed to moving the data to where the model is. So I think this will actually be one of the things to look after. And recently, I think we have been focusing a lot more on smart home. I think we have clearly seen that voice is the interface in homes, that users, so natural for users to use. There's no friction. You don't need any, you know, like other devices or anything controlled. So I think we are also heavily focused on working with smart things together and being able to do something, create a very natural, intuitive kind of experience on how users can control. And you can imagine the number of connected devices in your home. And that's, again, it's gone up exponentially. And so this is how do you manage that in a very simple and seamless way? So I think these are some of the areas where how Bixby is continuing to evolve.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the smart home control stuff because I have smart lights in my house and voice is such the natural way to use them. And yet it doesn't fully work all the way it should. So I think this focus on one, being smarter, learning what the user wants. Say, ask for something you don't understand instead of failing, prompt them and learn. And then the whole idea, it's really cool. And if any listeners watch the SDC presentations, Samsung Developer Conference, it was this idea of go query the IoT device, get its state, take the voice input, and then use the combination of the two of those to make a smart, intelligent decision. I just love the idea of mixing the IoT device state, your voice, and then doing the smart thing. I always say the ultimate voice assistant would be more like a human assistant who would just know, right? I know you asked for this, but I know looking at everything else, I'll do this for you because I know what's going on. I know your preferences there. And to my mind, that kind of advancement is really where the industry needs to go, where the voice, it becomes super intuitive. You ask for something and it just happens. Now we're still not quite there. You still have to be pretty specific about what you ask. But what I think is going to happen in the future is going to be more ask for something in general. And just like I said, like a human assistant would understand it, you'll go do it. But you're leading in my next question, which is I want to broaden things beyond Bixby and just talk about the voice and conversational AI industry in general. Where are we as an industry?
I think we're still in early days. If you take a broad look, I think there's been a lot of progress on distribution, getting distribution and user adoption. For example, I think over half of US adults now use, you know, voice assistants like consistently either on their phone or at the home. And I think this percentage is just going to go up. But I think in terms of what they can actually do, what sort of tasks, I think we're still scratching the surface there. Mostly it's simple tasks such as weather, timer, and not something, as you said. I completely agree that the ultimate, in my point of view, is human, like having a real personal assistant. So if you actually think about it, the most like senior execs in like Fortune 100 companies, every single exec actually a personal assistant. And the reason why, and the reason why that's the case is they actually act like a force multiplier for them in terms of productivity and like managing everything of like that the exec does. So imagine, to me, the ultimate, you know, like vision would be imagine every single person actually has access to such an assistant, and it would be a force multiplier, you know, for the individual productivity, actually a force multiplier for GDP if everyone is productive. So I think that's the ultimate, you know, vision. Obviously, there are a lot of, you know, technical challenges that needs to be overcome. And one of the earliest videos is, I still find it inspiring, is the Apple's original, you know, like Knowledge Navigator came way back, you know, when, but still it's so inspiring and relevant to this day of what potentially that kind of an experience can be. I think we're scratching the surface. So those simple tasks have, I think we are there, but I think the really real advancements and real delightful experiences would be when it can actually do the more complex tasks. So we talked about, you know, voice commerce, even in the smart home, turning on and turning off and setting things are kind of like a very a table stakes, right? If you will. The real smarts would come in, like actually like the intelligence comes in and combines with these, either it's a services or some of these devices. And that's where, that's to me, when you get that magical experiences is, for example, the service is telling you, hey, I think this is, you should set your thermostat, you know, automatically to this so that not after the fact, after you're feeling cold and you have to go and just use. So voice right now is more used as an interface. I think the fact, the time when it becomes truly magical is that the intelligence layer where there is machine learning, there is all that happening in the background. And obviously personalization is a key thing, and which actually understands. And all these things you can refer back to having a personal assistant. The key thing is if you just ask the personal assistant, say tickets to Orlando, and then they know exactly, you know, what times you want to fly, what is your preference. For example, I'm, you know, vegetarian, so your meal options, you don't need to go. And today, I think you have to basically just go and enumerate all these things in a very long, you know, conversation, which doesn't make it really productive or helpful. And I think the time when that personalization comes in and being able to do those kinds of tasks where you just give it something and it can actually work in the background. Again, we're moving away from the request response model of today, where an assistant actually works in the background and comes back with interesting, you know, options and insights. And obviously the human is still involved in terms of filtering things out or picking things. So I think that's eventually where I think we are heading. We're still early days, and obviously a lot of, as you like, a lot of technical challenges needs to be solved, a lot of innovation due to get to that kind of a future.
It's interesting you're talking about the Knowledge Navigator video, which I love that video too. And you look at it and you're like, God, I want that. And I've always had the view that voice is, because it's kind of the ultimate skeuomorphic interface, it's the way we naturally talk. And now we're talking to devices that way. It seems like it should be easier because we see and we're like, oh, well, of course that should work. But the AI behind that is really sophisticated. For all the work and amazing work that's been done in voice AI and AI in general, I still think we just got off the starting line. And there's so much ahead of us. And what a great point about if you did have an assistant, we spend too much of our time doing these mundane things. If I could have an assistant go and do a bunch of this stuff, it'd be great. I tried to get my teenagers to be assistants, but they're the world's worst because they have attitudes. But no, I joke. And things. So you talking a little bit about what are the strengths of the industry there, where it's going. Maybe just diving a little deeper, what do you think we're really good at right now with voice? And I'm going to ask you, where do we have a bunch of work to do to propel it forward?
Yeah, so I think on the strengths of just the voice, I think voice is, as I said, the most natural interface for users to communicate. I think there are, if you take a broad look at the world, there are a lot more people who can talk versus who can actually read and write. So just by, in terms of sheer numbers, it's such a natural thing. The first thing, you know, my little one learns is to be able to speak before she can, you know, actually read or write. So that's how we learn any language, and that's how we have evolved. So that's a very, very natural thing for users to do. And the other thing is, it's also the fastest input modality compared to, you know, anything else that we have. Not necessarily on the output side, but I think definitely being able to communicate what you want, it's the best interface. And so I think there are some inherent kind of advantages of being able to like use that. Like, obviously there are people who are like going and taking it to that next level with like Cyborg, like where you have this Neuralink like kind of interface where you can directly connect your brain to, you know, like what it's thinking, to some kind of an action or a query. I think that's a really interesting kind of space, but the most natural form, I would say, of people being able to communicate today is voice. So I think that's the underlying power of how users and the whole industry can actually benefit from that. And in terms of what we've been able to do, as I said, I think we've been able to get everyone using voice. I think home, it's a big thing with smart homes now that most of the devices are pretty much, it'll be hard for you to find a device that is not smart. Like I think light bulbs are for me, a great way of seeing like the evolution of technology. I think like probably 5 years ago, you go in and probably the incandescent light was the norm, and you had, oh, the CFLs are coming in, and LED was probably this $40 kind of thing, which is, oh, I just want to play around with this like a hobby. Probably a few years ago, you would see, okay, LED was the norm, and then the smart bulbs were starting to gain traction. Now you see, you go in, you go to, you know, like IKEA, you go to Home Depot, you will see pretty much by default, that's what you're buying. So pretty much any device, every device will be connected. So I think that we've done really well in terms of on the home, being able to control things like using voice, but still it's being used as an interface. And also a lot of a simple task, as I said, like weather and setting a timer and alarm and all that, what you traditionally use to pick up a device and unlock it and do all that is now just a command away. So I think that part, distribution, pretty much most devices have access. So there is a lot of devices which are voice enabled. I think it's set up very well. And then you have some like users who are, you know, really engaged and using it, but not at the level where, for example, the kind of stuff that you do with your phone, like all with all the apps and the kind of richness of what you are able to do, some of those complex tasks. I think that's probably the next stage of evolution, of being able to do something like multitasking, being able to do, it knows you very well, like, you know, personalization, being able to be more proactive. And so there's a lot of those kinds of things which are probably like down the line.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, personalization and proactive. I think that's so powerful. It's the idea of, I shouldn't have to, it's all command driven now. Instead of giving commands, it intuitively does things. It asks me, it knows me, and it does things for me. And that is the next evolution of AI. And I think that'll be a huge unlock for voice, because then it'll be more general. You ask it to do something. I'm thinking of going traveling, go do a bunch of research, right? In my car, and I come home and it's compile all this information for me, or maybe even book things for me, or put reservations on hold. That would be super cool, and talk about a big time saver. So
I think, one thing you also asked about some of the challenges. I think the challenges of, particularly from the developer side, and there are definitely discoveries is a huge challenge. I think there are a lot of capsules actually that are created than that are being used. And I think in a way it also exists in the mobile. There are a lot more apps and then actually what is being used. But I think even not at the same scale, but I think definitely it's a bigger challenge for voice developers to be able to. I think a couple of things that I want to touch on. One was, I think the discover part is, how do you discover these capabilities? And also the current invocation models, I think starting from even just invoking the assistant using a wake word, and you have to constantly keep waking things up. And having to remember every single like service or every single skill and by its name and being able to do that, it's unnatural. And it's not something that you're just putting a lot of burden on the user. And that's usually probably one of the big limitations. So to me, I think the invocation becoming very natural is actually, again, it all goes back to the same thing. It's just users say what they want and the assistant is able to like figure things out is probably that's some technical advancements are needed to be able to overcome some of these things that they are. So I think this is another thing that I just wanted to touch on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so spot on. You're right. There's the parallels to the App Store, but it gets worse because you start a capsule or a skill or an action and you use it once and then you can't remember the name of it. And so it's lost there. It's not like on a phone, there's an icon, you can see it. And so I think that's a big challenge. And it's very mechanical, wake word, that kind of thing. And if we can't come back past the privacy issues, some kind of sentient thing. And maybe that goes to your edge computing idea, compute at the edge. So it's private, but maybe it's just more listening. And it hears something, just like an assistant again, like a human, right, might hear something and be like, oh, I can help with that, or I can do this. I think that would be a big, big, big win. So, hey, Prasad, you and I have seen a lot of voice experiences. What do you think is the biggest challenge to creating a compelling voice experience?
Yeah, so I think there are still several barriers to creating, you know, compelling voice experiences. I think the most important ones are, I think one is knowledge, tools and technology in that order. I think the first one is there's not a lot of knowledge base on how to create compelling voice experiences. I think it's still evolving of how to think about from say a voice forward or a voice first, building a voice first experience. Also, as you can imagine, only a select set of developers in a small set of companies have access to powerful tools and data sets that they can use to actually build a really compelling user experience. And I think there's still a disparity between access to those tools, between what's internal versus what actually gets available. And even something as simple as creating any AI service, a feedback loop is very important. But I think if you're building a skill for any platform, it's actually hard for any developer to be able to actually do your own feedback loop because the data sets that you have is limited between what's available to a platform versus what's available to an actual skill developer. And I think the third one is, I think there's more advancements needed, particularly on the NLU side of things. I think the speech recognition side of things has actually evolved to a point where it's pretty, and that's taken actually a couple of decades, I would say. Obviously, it's accelerated in the last few years. But I think on the natural language understanding side, being able to do rejection, topic detection, reasoning. So there's a lot of advanced concepts that would actually, and being able to do that, expose that in a very simple way for developers would actually help take the bar, raise the bar so that the experiences are from good, it actually becomes like great.
Yeah, that makes a sense. It's interesting when I think about the dev tools, because I think the first web thing I built was like back in 95 or something. And man, the tools just were not good. Even in the .com era, they were not good. So you got to give time. The tools for building a web or a mobile app right now are amazing. We've only been building voice experiences for, mainstream, I'll call it the B2C voice experiences for 5-ish plus years. Before that, clearly there was things going on in, IVRs, the conversational AI stuff that is going on today. It's only 5 or 6 years old, so I think it's good to have some patience. Like, it takes some time to get the tooling right. So you're absolutely right, and I couldn't agree with more with you, the NLU. I always say that the AI is really good, and it's really crude at the same time. Give credit to the amazing AI work that's been done and go, man, it's still way too hard. So couldn't agree with you more. That's spot on. So kind of a related question, what's some of the bigger mistakes that you see doing or companies doing when they're building a voice experience?
Yeah, I think the biggest one I've seen is a lot of the mindset when they're actually designing, some of these experiences. I think it's still the predominant mindset is around translating like an app or an API experience into voice rather than actually being able to say, okay, what would truly differentiating voice experience? So having that kind of a voice first, voice forward kind of design thinking is still evolving. I think you're seeing like more and more experiences like getting better, but I think predominantly it's either limited by what's actually the app experience or like what's the capabilities of the API. Rather, it should be the other way where, okay, this is what we need to, and this is the exactly the voice experience should be. And then how do we design, you know, an API to be able to support it? And it's not just the API, there are probably some, you know, backend capabilities that actually can help. So I think that's probably, and still the net effect is you're still optimizing for other interfaces which are popular. Either it is on the web, it's still, you know, typing is still the primary interface, and the mobile, it's touch. So it's still being, if you look at a lot of the experiences, you start with voice, but then you suddenly get into, okay, how do I fill an address? How do I do this? So there's a lot of places where you have to go back to other modalities rather than like voice.
Yeah, it's almost like you see they skin their mobile app with a voice interface, which is natural. It's actually, yeah. It happens with every new technology. When mobile first came out, people built a bunch of websites for and took desktop stuff for mobile. It looked really bad and didn't work so well, and it evolved. Voice, same thing. It's happening and things. But yeah, it's a voice first approach, not being poisoned in a sense by your past user UX kind of. The way the web and mobile work are totally different than voice. A really astute observation. Very true.
Yeah, I think a great point on web and mobile. So I remember, I think Facebook for a long time on the mobile, they were actually, they were using this, okay, it's still going to be HTML. It's like a web app, and then running inside like an iOS, an app. And so they were really debating that, like whether to move forward. And I think they'd made a huge difference once they went native, you know, like mobile experience. And I think like Android and iOS, I think they've, it's really took off on the mobile. And now predominantly, I think most of the usage is still. So yeah, so I think that same kind of mindset will, same kind of shift will happen. But I think some of the tools and even the platform capabilities that is gets exposed to developers has to get better and evolve.
So hey, Prasad, I always like to ask my guests, I call this my hidden gem question. But what's a voice experience that you really like? Do you think that more people should discover? Something that may be very useful, very helpful, very fun, but not enough people use it.
Yeah, so I'll start with, I think, what is probably the most delightful, you know, experience, voice experience that I have experienced. So I think music is one of the experiences where I think from an overall voice experience, it's actually truly delightful. And you could see that in the usage and how users are using it as well. And there are probably reasons more than it is being used. I always like to think why that's the case. So I feel that it has actually got that perfect mix of not only on the front end, being able to recognize and do the natural language understanding of the queries, but also actually on the service, there's a lot of machine learning and recommender systems that actually music service itself in trying to get like really understanding the user better. Again, things that we talked about, like personalization, being able to like know exactly like what the user. Otherwise, you can visualize the music experience would be like when you say play music, imagine it coming back and saying, asking you which genre you want to listen to, and then like which artist. And then by the second question, people are dropping off because it's like it's magical. Because the backend service actually has a good understanding of the user. It actually has a good understanding of what it wants to serve and being able to match that. And so anytime when you have this mix of search, which is pretty, anytime when that experience involves search, especially with the large catalog, and there is some personalization recommender system, and then you add a really good voice and natural language interface on top of it, it just becomes magical that all you have to say is play music. It knows to figure out whether it needs to play through Spotify, is it Discover Weekly, what's exactly that you want to listen to. And that's when it just becomes such a simple, magical experience compared to what it was before. So the second point around the hidden gem, I think music is fairly discovered. And I think it's well discovered and it's pretty popular. I feel like on the, particularly on the podcast and the news, you know, side, I think there's a lot of opportunity there, particularly for voice, because again, it's the same set of ingredients where it's like, there's a lot of content, there's a lot of good quality content, but the user, it takes a lot of time for the user to be able to find like some and refine and listen to. So I think the main, one of the gaps is the personalization and the whole recommender systems and machine learning on the back end. But I think that's something that I've seen off late that, you know, listening to your like news and podcasts using voice is probably something that I think it's going to be a delightful experience. And I think more and more users would actually start using it and enjoying it.
I so agree with you that kind of a personalization recommendation engine plus voice is kind of a marriage made in heaven.
Yeah.
And yeah, great point about podcasting. It'll be very interesting as you're talking about podcasting. I was thinking about Spotify, who's been so aggressively getting into podcasting and buying podcast companies, and they're very good at their recommendation engine. And so they bring that over to the podcast world. It could be in just audio content world. Could be very interesting. Even news would be really interesting to do too. We all have too many news sources. Give me a personalized feed. Yeah, let's see that. Let's see that happen. So this is the perfect time to ask this because we are in, it's early January 2022. So time to bring out your crystal ball and give me a prediction for 2022 in voice.
Yeah, on the consumer side, I think the focus on the privacy side of things will actually continue. I think there will be more emphasis on privacy. And I think the natural response to that as devices get more and more powerful would be you'll see a lot more of the AI and the voice, you know, capability actually getting enabled on the device or on the edge. So I think this is going to, I think this trend is just getting started. And there is a lot of value, as I said, when bringing the model to the where the data is. So it's definitely better for privacy. It enables a lot more scenarios. And also in some cases, the volume of data is to be shipped around. I think you can look at self-driving cars and things like that, where there's a ton of sensor data that's coming in. And so that's when, or the data itself is sensitive. So you don't want to be like moving it around. So it's probably better off being in the user's device rather than like moving it around. And also the other thing I think is, there will be a lot more advances and focus on the NLU side of things. So more conversational experiences. I think, as we discussed before, less of command and control and more truly conversational, where it's about the, I think at a high level, I would say like right now, I think still the interfaces are such a way that the users have to adapt to an interface, to the assistant, rather than, and actually the assistant adapting to what the user is saying. So I think those kinds of like really intelligent multi-turn conversations, multi-topic conversations, I think those you're starting to see that. I think that will probably accelerate more on just the raw horse, because with GPT-3 and other advancements, you will see large, like really large models that will be capable of doing a lot more. So I think those would be those are the three areas I will see a lot more, I expect to see in 2020.
Awesome. Now I'm going to ask you to really rub that crystal ball. And let's project out 5 or 10 years and give me your prediction. What's going to happen in 5 or 10 years of voice? Where are we going to be?
Yeah. So I think I'll start off with, I think the enterprise side, I think there will be a lot more of the voice becoming a lot more prevalent on the enterprise side. I think, again, in my opinion, there's probably one of the reasons why we're not seeing a fast enough evolution of voice on the consumer side is lack of business model. And it's still, you know, controlled by like a few platform providers, and most of the developers don't have the set of, you know, skill set to be able to build and the tools to be able to build like what they want. So I think on the enterprise side, there is a lot direct like business model, there's like revenue, there's clear value exchange like tied to it. So I think the evolution of the technologies will probably quickly transfer to enterprise, and there will be a lot of, as businesses are going digital, especially accelerated by the pandemic, it creates a lot of opportunities for both AI and automation to solve for. And I think conversational AI is a great way, and you'll see a lot of applications in, say, the customer service, healthcare, and other domains. So I think I'm really looking forward and excited at the possibilities on the enterprise side. On the assistant side, I think in 5 to 10 years, I believe we'll actually be living in a voice-first world. Voice assistants will not just be a feature, but will actually be very deeply integrated, and voice will be the interface through which users experience a product. If you think about it, devices like television, watch, So these are all like prime candidates where, you know, if voice is truly works, it could be the best interface for those devices, because all other modalities are actually pretty painful. Try typing on a watch, try entering your logging into your, you know, account on a remote control. These are just so painful, right? There are some workarounds now, you know, trying to use your mobile and all that, but I think voice is such a natural interface for these. So it will just be part of the device rather than it being a feature. The other way I expect assistants to get way better at personalization and multitasking, as I said, the assistant should know you, and obviously in a very privacy conscious way, and being able to actually handle complex tasks in the background and being able to just check in with you and get some updates, whatever information that it needs from the user, rather than it being a very synchronous interaction. And then I think it'll also evolve from the current just trying to understand you to actually reasoning and mm-hmm. and really get better at, you know, handling complex tasks. So I think those are some of the dimensions it will, I expect the assistants to evolve and becoming much more integrated deeply into these devices that you use.
Great. You're cordially invited to the Rogers podcast prediction party in 5 or 10 years when we'll all go and see and get a good laugh, and maybe we'll have some of them right, some completely wrong. But yeah, it's hard to see 5 or 10 years out in the future with the tech industry, but I love your thinking. So wrapping up, Prasad, if people want to keep in touch with you, what Samsung Bixby is doing, what's the best way to do so?
The best way to stay in touch with what's happening with Bixby is staying connected with our, I guess, the Bixby blog. Like we publish, you know, a lot of what is happening with Bixby on it. And the Bixby Developer Podcast is also a great way to stay connected, not just with what's happening with Bixby, but also what's happening with voice and conversational AI in general.
Thank you.
And yeah, if you want to stay connected with me, I think LinkedIn is a great tool. Please reach out to me on LinkedIn and happy to connect and chat.
Great. Well, I'll make sure to get your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. And great. So, hey, Prasad, it's been a true pleasure. Look, you and I have worked together for 3 years, and we've had a lot of conversations, but we never had a chance to talk about them publicly. So I thought this was a fabulous opportunity to bring you on. I've always admired your deep thought about the industry and everything you've done for Bixby. So thank you so much for sharing with our listeners and sharing with me all your thoughts around the voice industry, where we are, where we're going, and what is all happening. So appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Roger. It's been fun to talk to you. And again, thanks for the opportunity to connect with your, you know, audience. And I've been a very avid listener of your podcast. It's been fun, yeah, to talk about the voice. So.
Great. Well, thank you. That's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.